the real point of this holiday is to just feel grateful. There's a myth that this is a very depressing holiday for many people. New Year's, Christmas, Thanksgiving, very tough times. In my opinion, as Walter M. Sterling, as my opinion, is this is a terrific time. Because all you have to do to enjoy this time of year is go outside. That's all you have to do. You can go to a church, community center. You can help feed people who need help being fed. There are so many ways to participate in this holiday. Whereas to me, the worst holidays are Memorial Day, the 4th of July, and Labor Day. Because in order to participate in those holidays, I have to go be invited. You have to invite me to your pool. You have to invite me to your golf club. You have to invite me to your swimming club. There's nothing scarier than a single man walking out onto a public beach. It just creeps everybody out. These are the holidays that I can enjoy. These are the holidays we can enjoy together. My name is Walter Sterling. This is Sterling on Sunday, a very fresh show for Christmas night. Now, the best thing that you could do for me, because I'm making this radio show for Christmas, the best thing you can do for me is look at whatever you're looking at from your 18-wheeler, from your car, whatever you're looking at, and take a picture. Take a picture, Sterling Snap, and send it to me, please, to WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. I would love to see it. And then I'll post it on my Instagram, Walter Sterling, or my Facebook, Walter M. Sterling. It's always a little confusing to me, which it is. But it would be so great to have that, and I'd appreciate it, and I thank you. All right, what have we got here? We have many of our standard features tonight, but our features are very different than most radio shows. And let's give you some samples, because this is going to be a relaxed, fun, nice show tonight. You ready?
Merry Christmas. Hi, it's Dan Gaffney.
And Becky Gaffney.
Tonight, we're going to be joined by some of our children with a Christmas story.
Glory to God in the highest.
Tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
You just spent an entire weekend hearing the boring stories of your loser relatives. Coming up, some interesting stories of people who are far worse off than you. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. That's coming up on the best Florida stories of 2022.
Can't beat that. And we have a retired New York City police detective. That's right, a retired New York City police detective who has pretty amazing stories.
Ho, 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 true crime fans. It's retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. On this week's episode of Confessions of Retired NYPD Detective, I tell the story of a cop who had one drink too many the night before Christmas and fell asleep under a desk in the Bronx District Attorney's office. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Christmas for me means Diospyros Virginiana.
What? What? Nobody cares about that.
Christmas for me means Diospyros Virginiana.
What's that mean? What does that mean? Dysvirus Dysvidiana. All right, I'm going to share with you some interesting stories, I think. When you watch the Pope's Mass on TV, you can't believe what goes into that. You know, I figured he knows how to give a Mass. The people in Rome know how to do Mass. A few years ago, I was in Rome on Christmas Eve. It's unlike anything you could ever imagine. The experience is incredible. But to me, the best part about Christmas is right now. When you and I are driving on Route 80, the 5, the 101, the 4 in Florida, and every few miles, there's the snowdrift. There's the pitch blackness of a swamp in Florida, a snowdrift in New England on I-90, deluge. And every few miles, there is a glow. There's a glow. And you look and you say, what is that? There's like a glow in the snow. And what is it? And then you realize the colors are pretty. There's red, green, some wacky shades of blue. And what it is one person with a trailer or their small house has surrounded it with Christmas lights, beautiful Christmas lights. And the way they reflect on the ground in the snow, the way they give lift and light to snowdrifts, is kind of a miracle. It's pretty special. A whole world is in that snowdrift. A whole world is in that house or the trailer or the RV. And you can't even imagine the grandmothers and the cousins, everybody in that house, the warmth of that house. And I get to look at it out my window for 10 seconds. And I'm part of their lives for 10 seconds. To me, that's America. That's an American Christmas. When I can see the decorations in the snow, off the side of my car. The next thing I feel always is protected and safe. When I'm driving through bad snow or rain, mostly snow, and I realize at some moment that the temperature in my car is perfect, that I don't have to do anything to feel safe and warm. I got the temperature just right. The glow from the dashboard is warm and comfortable. The same thing in your 18-wheeler. You hit a point in your trip where the temperature is just right, the sound of the motor is just right, the coffee is finally at the right temperature, and everything's fine. That's the gift of driving at this time of year. That's the gift. To know that we're safe in that car, that the tires are okay, the motor isn't doing anything scary, but we get these wonderful spectacles on the side of the road, these wonderful gifts. A lot of people had the experience of working all day Christmas or part of the day on Christmas. And coming up in the third hour, I'm going to share with you my first Christmas on the radio. Because being on the radio on Christmas is a unique experience. And it was far more unique than I could have ever anticipated. And I'll share that with you coming up. We're going to have a good show tonight. It's Christmas at Night. My name's Walter M. Sterling. And this is Sterling on Christmas.
For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. This is the best Florida stories of 2022.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. For our first floor story, this is in the Tampa area. Now, we don't know why this 17-year-old runaway girl was being picked up. I don't know if shoplifting or whatever. We're not allowed to know what started this. But as the 43-year-old Florida cop was taking the 17-year-old runaway to the juvenile detention center in the back of his squad car, it doesn't sound real when I tell you so here, the WTSP.
When he started to look through her phone, where he eventually found a video of her twerking. The girl alleged he then opened her Snapchat and found a photo of her topless. She said while looking at the photo, he hit something on the road.
He hits a deer in his squad car. So what happens is he has to get out of the squad car, sees if the deer, yep, deer's dead. What about the damage to his car? Got to go check that out. The girl is complaining that she's starving and hadn't eaten in days. So he actually does something nice. He uncuffs her and gives her the other half of a sandwich that he had in the passenger seat. Girl finishes the sandwich, and now he's got to cuff her and put her back in the car. And then this happens.
The girl said Labrito grabbed her buttocks while he was placing the cuffs on her and lifted her shirt up and grabbed her breast.
So if this is true, then this is a horrible story. The good news is the cop was the subject of an investigation. He was fired and will never work in law enforcement again. Because you have to stick with the protocol. In Florida, if you pick up a 17-year-old runaway, you are legally required to play Bon Jovi. I think that's what it says. I'm not sure. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What is this?
Stay tuned. Part two of Florida Stories is right around the corner. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and get past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
All right. We have a great website. It's Walter Sterling Show, waltersterlingshow.com, and I look forward to sharing more Christmas stories with you coming up in seconds. Sterling on Christmas.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He's got a bag that's filled with toys for boys and girls again. Hear those sleigh bells jingle, jangle, oh, what a beautiful sight. So jump in bed and cover your head, 'cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He doesn't care if you're rich or poor, he loves you just the same. Santa Claus knows we're all God's children, that makes everything right. So fill your hearts with Christmas cheer, 'cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He'll come around when chimes ring out that it's Christmas morn again. Peace on earth will come to all if we just follow the light. So let's give thanks to the Lord above, 'cause Santa Claus comes to...
All right. This is Sterling on Christmas. Welcome to our big Christmas show. It's you and me in the car, getting back from the relatives, the aunt that you really don't like, the one that your kids really, really don't want to kiss. Those are the relatives. That's what we have to put up with. And the resentments, because now, what'd you get? What did you get for Christmas? Did you get clothes? To me, as a memory, sort of a genetic memory from my childhood, anytime I got clothes, I was not happy. It didn't matter. All I wanted was gear. As a guy in radio, all I ever wanted was, you know, gear. I wanted a tape recorder. The best Christmas I ever had was in third grade. And in retrospect, I can't believe my parents did it. I was always obsessed with being on the radio. Whatever hobby you've got, there's one little toy, gadget, device that you need to really make it come to life, to take it from a hobby to the real world. And in my case, it was a reel-to-reel tape recorder. That's what I wanted, was a reel-to-reel tape recorder. In third grade, my parents gave me a Webcor reel-to-reel tape recorder. I couldn't believe it. Neither could they. I also got my first transistor radio, which lives under the pillow. That's what transistor radios. I can't believe all these idiots who keep saying, well, you know, we have to make radio more portable. We got to get it into an iPhone. We have to get radio into an iPhone. Well, yeah, radio should be in an iPhone, but the fact is it has been portable since the invention of the transistor in the late 1940s. You could get a Sony radio, which I did when I was in third grade, and it worked just fine. You can get portable radios. You can get Walkman. Yeah, I'm not kidding. You can still get a Walkman. The fact is that they don't need to be in your phone. Who needs that distraction? But I hope it does. I hope you can get them. There was a big hoopla a few years ago to get radios into phones, and the excuse was you need it for emergency alert from FEMA. FEMA needs to be able to reach you, or an Amber Alert needs to be able to reach you, but that isn't why anybody wants it in their phone. The reason they want it in their phone is because you want to be entertained. That's why you want it in a phone. Crazy people. All right, that was the best that I got. There were three things I got in my third grade Christmas. I got a transistor radio, then I could hear Cousin Brucey under my pillow. I wanted a reel-to-reel tape recorder, and I got the reel-to-reel tape recorder so that I could record Cousin Brucey on my transistor radio. And the last thing was a toy called a Thinkatron. Do you know about the Thinkatron? Did you hear about this? Here's what it was. It looked like a mainframe computer, but it was about the size of 1 foot by 1 foot. But it was designed to look like a mainframe computer. And it came with punch cards, and the punch cards had questions on them. And then you put it in the Thinkatron, you pushed it in, and it would make a gear sound, which no computer ever has. Boom. And then on the screen, in dots, in dot matrix, it would show A, B, C, or T or F, true or false. Multiple choice answers, T or F, multiple choice. That was the Thinkatron. That was an amazing toy. That was a great Christmas. Reel-to-reel tape recorder, Cousin Brucie Under the Pillow, and a Thinkatron. However, since those times, there have been toys put out that actually parents throughout America have petitioned to have taken off the shelf. I will give you two examples. A few years ago, Mattel decided that they needed a Barbie that would demonstrate puberty. No, I'm not kidding. A Barbie doll that would demonstrate puberty. Here's how it worked. You lifted the doll's arms up, and the breasts would come out, and the doll would get taller. There was a ratio between the height and the size of the breasts. I don't know. For some reason, there were parents very upset about this, petitioned Mattel, said, do not do this, go away. And they did. And that was interesting. at Toys R Us a few years ago, there was a set of toys based on a TV show that had to do with drugs. And one of the characters in the TV show is a drug dealer. And what they decided to do at Toys R Us is make a doll of a drug dealer. That's right, a doll of a drug dealer. You could go into Toys R Us and you could get a doll of a drug dealer. He looked menacing. He carried a strange bag. He didn't want to be caught. That was an actual toy, and it was called a drug dealer. But my favorite toy ever that actually was marketed and did exist, you could buy a doll that came with a stripper pole. And the doll would spin around the stripper pole and flash. No, really. It would spin around the stripper pole and flash. These are the toys of our youth. Think about the toys you gave away today and whether or not any of them would be recalled either by public outcry or health reasons a few years from now. Just think about that. Is that possible that could happen? It is possible. There was a creepy crawler maker. Remember that? A creepy crawler maker? And the creepy crawler maker made creepy crawlers. How did they do that? The way they did that is you got this liquid rubber, you know, a liquid putty, and you put it in this very hot mold. There was like a super hot mold. And now this mold was so hot that if you did touch it, you would get burned. But it didn't really seem to matter. And, I mean, kids could really get hurt with this, and I'm sure many of them did. Here's the puberty doll.
In 74, Skipper seemed too upset at those.
No, it's a big show. We'll do it right.
Here Meet the Barbie Growing Up Skipper doll. Published in the year 1974, Skipper seemed to upset adults right out of the box with its ridiculous design concept. The Barbie company wanted to cover the topic of puberty in their next line of toys, so Growing Up Skipper was born to little praise. With just this simple twist of her arm, Skipper goes from child to teen. A fun idea in theory, but the way it's executed is just bad. They make her taller and made her breasts grow exponentially in size. Not only did this set an unrealistic expectation for young girls regarding their puberty, it's just so inappropriate.
And the stripper doll, which I'm going to share with you so you know I wasn't lying.
Most parents want their kids to grow up to be doctors, actors, or lawyers, but the ones that bought this toy must not. A picture posted to the website ParentDish.com in 2009 showed a parent who found this pole dancing doll in a local toy store. Now that's bad, but it gets worse. The graphics on the box say a variety of things, including style, up and down, go round and round, and worst of all, flash. In what world did people think it was okay to make a toy like this? Why would we ever want kids to think they should take up pole dancing at such a young age? They're just kids. Some people thought it was a hoax, but a writer at the website Gizmodo, Jesus Diaz, wrote in an article that there seemed to be no photo editing done whatsoever, saying, "It didn't seem Photoshopped to me. It feels more like the typical Chinese-made product you can only find in low-cost stores."
Yeah, low-cost stores in Chinatown. That's where those usually exist. I mean, just think about that. It's so crazy that people would make dolls like that and that they were coveted. No, really. Anytime a kid sees a doll that they like, it's coveted. You're stuck. You better give it to them. I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling at Christmas. It's great to be with you with a fresh snow and a fresh show. We love being here. What have I got for you? I have a lot to do. Let's see. What would you like to hear now? Coming up, I'm going to share with you Christmas in Rome. I'm going to share with you what it's like at the Pope's Mass. One of the things about the Pope's Mass is you and I just get to see it on TV. We didn't realize what goes into making that Mass. And then I'm going to share my Christmas story of my first Christmas at work. It was heartbreaking for my poor mom. It really was heartbreaking for my poor mom. And we have the Gaffney family. The Gaffney family consists of 7 children in a 150-year-old house.
Merry Christmas! Hi, it's Dan Gaffney.
And Becky Gaffney.
Tonight, we're going to be joined by some of our children with a Christmas story.
Glory to God in the highest.
Tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
It's great to be at a radio station at Christmas time. Because at radio stations at Christmas time, nobody leaves. They just hang around. And everybody delivers food, cookies, cakes, all of that. I hope you had a great Christmas. And the great thing about being on the air on Christmas is that we get to drive through the country, across Route 80, up and down 5, the 101, the I-90, the Luge. The Luge, I-90 is this road in upstate New York, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. And I swear to gosh, the state of New York has abandoned this road. It's as though you've discovered a Roman road in upstate, in Great Britain that's been abandoned. There used to be tolls on I-90 in upstate New York. They aren't there anymore. But the scariest thing is there used to be rest stops with McDonald's, places to eat, Cinnabons. They're gone. They've been closed. There are 2 or 3 of them that have been closed. You look on either side of the road, and all you see are these abandoned trailer camps and these abandoned farms and just the most depressing place in the world. Then you throw in the weather, where it's always bad. The weather in upstate New York is always bad. And you're riding on I-90, and everything around you looks as though it has been leveled, decimated by a flood or maybe some sort of war situation. It's a horrible road. I hope you're not on I-90. I hope you're on I-4 in Florida, where it's beautiful. You can see the inland waterway. It's just gorgeous. Coming up tonight, we're going to talk about Christmas in Rome. I'm going to share with you the story of my first Christmas working, which was an incredible experience, like not a bad experience at all. We'll talk about that. And we'll talk about the interesting phenomena of going out to buy a Christmas tree, and there are none. There are none. Last year, I went out to buy a Christmas tree, and oh, gee, there were none. That was a bad experience. My name's Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling on Sunday. You can stay in touch with me by sending me an email, a picture of what you're looking at waltermsterling@gmail.com. All right. It's Sterling at Christmas. Welcome. It is a pleasure to be with you on Christmas night. There's nothing more special than this, and this is a fresh show. Most of these shows on at this time, these are not fresh snows. This is as fresh as the snow outside. Welcome to Sterling at Night. This is the best time to be on the radio. I've always loved to be on the radio on legal holidays. I do this show every Sunday night from 10 p.m. Eastern to 1 a.m. Eastern, and 7 p.m. West Coast to 10 p.m. West Coast. And we're backed by great affiliates and brilliant program directors like Steve Moore and Bill White. Steve Moore and Bill White, that's about it. 35 past the hour, and we get to drive across the country now. We get to be alone and we get to go home. It's the best time of day to drive home. Because in your car right now, there are two kids who are mostly asleep. Your significant other is going, why didn't I get this? Why didn't I get that jewelry, that special sweater? Where's the vacation? Those are the things that your significant other is thinking about now. But you know what you and I are thinking about? The fact that the car isn't making any strange noise. The best gift I can get at Christmas is the check engine light does not go on. If I go through 24 hours without the check engine light going on, to me, that's an enormous victory. How about you? Yes, to me, that's just a huge victory. On my show, Sterling on Sunday, every Sunday night, we have some terrific features. Talent from all over the country contributes to the show, and they volunteer. They're all volunteers. I have a volunteer army. Nobody is paid to make features for Sterling on Sunday. And I'll give you a management tip. What I have said to all of them is, if it's a chore, if you're overwhelmed in a given week, you don't have any ideas, don't do it. Do not make one. And you know what? Because I have taken the pressure off the gas like that, where I don't expect anything on any given week, I get these fantastic contributions every single week. I'd have to say this is probably our favorite.
For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. This is the best Florida stories of 2022.
Thank you. Thank you.
For our next Florida story, we're going to Pasco County, Florida. The West Pasco Education Academy. It's a middle school. And some 12-year-old Florida boy, I don't know, man, maybe he was bored or just having a bad day. But in the middle of the school bus ride home, he decides he's going to open the emergency door in the back of the bus. So it makes that little, you know, that little buzzer sound. So the bus driver immediately has to stop and pull over, close the emergency door. Well, the 12-year-old Florida boy, look, he's just not done being mischievous. He goes up to where the bus driver is, grabs the fire extinguisher and sprays him and bounces out. Now, there's a Florida woman, I don't know if she's like a Good Samaritan or just a Karen busybody, but she pulls over when she sees the school bus door fly open. She thinks maybe it's in distress, maybe she can just help. So there's this woman who looks like she's, I don't know, 40, maybe 50, is in front of the school bus. And the 12-year-old, when he comes out, she starts scolding him. So he sprays her with the fire extinguisher. So it's kind of like the Michael Douglas movie Falling Down, but instead of an irate common man going on a vigilante violence spree. It's just a butthead little chubby 12-year-old squirting adults with a fire extinguisher. I mean, look, I'm pretty childish, so this is actually kind of funny. Hold my beer.
Wait, hold my beer. What?
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What?
For our next Florida story, this is one of those where the reporting on this is so horrible, I don't have a good answer for you. WPBF can help us out. But there's a Florida man who looks like he's 30, maybe 40. That's arrested for jacking with a crane, a sandhill crane.
Florida Fish and Wildlife officials say the suspect chased down a sandhill crane. Investigators say Boccuccio then grabbed the bird by its neck and began to remove some of its feathers. Investigators say witnesses told Jupiter police that the suspect held the feathers up in their faces, asking if they wanted to keep them. FWC officials say the crane flew away shortly after.
And I did more digging. They can't find any explanation on why this guy, I don't know if he was on bath salts or meth or just drunk, but why did he decide to wrestle with the crane? How do you even catch a crane? And then why was he ripping feathers off of it? And I do not have an answer for you. Hold my beer.
Wait, hold my beer. What?
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
This concludes today's episodes of Florida Stories. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and get past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Now, can you think of any other show that offers you something like Florida Stories? Of course not. You know what I want to see? I want to see what you're looking at right now. What are you looking at right now, this second? Take that overpriced iPhone that you have, the overpriced Galaxy phone, and take a picture of it. And send it to me, WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling, S-T-E-R-L-I-N-G, at Gmail. Send it to me, and I'll post it on my Instagram and my Facebook, and we'll be famous together. One of the things that has always fascinated me is in North Carolina, Parma, Ohio, a number of hot spots throughout the country. There are drive-through brews. There are beer barns. And it's usually just a house where the garage has been carved out so you can drive through it. You drive your car into the beer barn, into this garage, and you're surrounded by refrigerator units. Have you ever seen this? You're surrounded by refrigerator units. And in the refrigerator units are what? What? Beer and soda. And there's a person there who fills up your trunk with whatever you want. But interestingly, most of what those people sell are T-shirts saying that you've been to this beer barn. Mostly they sell souvenirs. But the whole thought of being able to drive into a house, have somebody load up your trunk with beer or T-shirts is and cigarettes. Oh, my God, certainly cigarettes. That's kind of an amazing fact. I don't think they have them in Spain. I don't think they have them in Yugoslavia or the south of France. Do you think they have beer barns in the south of France? No, probably not. Only here. And therefore, I started to wonder about, well, how are they managed? Like, who manages the beer barns? Who is in charge of the beer barns? Do they have management issues inside the beer barns? One of the things that we've explored on my show, Sterling, on Sunday, is we've explored the management challenges of a beer barn. How does it work? Who's in charge? Is there a supervisor? Is there a number two? We don't know. We decided to find out. That's coming up in 20 minutes on Sterling on Christmas Night. I have to confess that one of the things I like about Christmas a little too much is eggnog. Now, there's no alcohol in my eggnog. But just the taste of eggnog itself, to me, is great. And McDonald's and one other place has eggnog shakes. Now, what I do with eggnog is I buy it at the supermarket, I pour it into a glass, and then I put a lot of cinnamon on top. I'll drink enough of those until I'm sick. The thing about eggnog is there's no eggs in it, and there's no nog. It's just a unique, bizarre taste. Therefore, I like it. One of the other challenges of Christmas is, as time goes on, what do you do with the stocking? The challenge of the stocking is that for your significant other, the older they get, the smaller their gifts get. Diamond ring, not very big. Diamond earrings, not very big. USB cords, that's the key gift, not very big. So you have to start to put the gifts in the stocking. And when you're a kid, after you've opened your real gifts, then I'd go to the stocking. And that would have like little tchotchke toys, silly little toys. But each year a person gets older, the best gift are going in the stocking. And I grew up in a household that had stockings and toys, but we did not wrap the toys. My Santa did not wrap the toys because my Santa was practical. My Santa was not going to deal with thousands of pounds of paper and have to clean that up. No, my Santa was very practical. I'll share with you some other things about our Christmas, and I look forward to hearing from you at WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. I'm Walter Sterling, and this is Sterling. It's Christmas night. Welcome to Sterling at Christmas. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and I have a brand new show here for you on Christmas night. I hope you had a good Christmas, but if not, I hope you got a lot of stories from your Christmas. I hope you have a lot of resentments that you can share about the gifts that you should have gotten, but you didn't get. Do you have that situation? I thought so. I could tell by looking at you. I could tell that you were that person. Now, the Gaffneys have seven kids and a 150-year-old house.
Merry Christmas, Midnight Misfits, and Merry Christmas, Walter Sterling. Hi, it's Dan Gaffney.
And Becky Gaffney.
With a special Christmas message for you tonight.
We didn't have all the kids, but we gathered all of them together that we could to tell you a Christmas story.
A portion of the Gospel of Luke in the second chapter.
Joseph went up from Galilee, from the city of Nazareth to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and the family of David, in order to register along with Mary, who was engaged to him and was with child.
While they were there, the days were completed for her to give birth, and she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in cloths and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn.
In the same region, there were some shepherds staying out in the fields and keeping watch over their flock by night. And an angel of the Lord suddenly stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terribly frightened. But the angel said to them,
"Do not be afraid, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy, which will be for all the people. For today, in the city of David, there has been born a Savior, who is Christ the Lord. This will be a sign for you. You will find a baby wrapped in cloths, lying in a manger." And suddenly there appeared with the angel a multitude of heavenly hosts, praising God and saying,
"Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace is among men, with whom he is pleased."
When the angels had gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds began saying to one another, "Let us go straight to Bethlehem then, and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has made known to us."
So they came in a hurry and found their way to Mary and Joseph and the baby as he lay in the manger. When they had seen this, they made known the statement which had been told them about this child.
And all who heard it wondered at the things which were told them by the shepherds.
But Mary treasured all these things, pondering them in her heart.
The shepherds went back, glorifying and praising God for all they had heard and seen, just as had been told them.
Merry Christmas from the Gaffney family to yours.
Glory to God in the highest.
That's what happens when you have seven kids and a 150-year-old house. Now, the Gaffneys give us reports every Sunday about their 10 kids, seven kids, and the 150-year-old house. Can you imagine that? It's always amazed me on those home improvement shows, flip or sell it now, don't be stupid, don't sell it, buy the house at the shore, whatever it is. The houses that they always show that need to be fixed up, the ones that they're going to bring a ton of people in to renovate, they always look fine to me. The houses that they're starting with, they always seem fine. There aren't giant leaks. There aren't big holes in the floor. A whole different world. Let me tell you about the house that some of the houses we've rented. We rent nice houses. Now, I rent because I can't buy a house because I'm in show business. There will never be a house for me. No, I'm not kidding. There will never be a house for me. Let's see. In one apartment that we rented, I kept telling the landlady that there was a leak from the steam heat on the top floor. And that leak was coming down. Now, this was a 150-year-old townhouse. That means that the ceilings were about 2 feet thick of cement. And sure enough, one day, I leave the TV room, I come back in, and there is a pile of giant chunks of concrete. And I had told her for a year that that concrete was going to come down. And she didn't do anything. But I don't see those sort of homes on the big home improvement networks. Do you? No, they always look just fine. Like, well, paint it if it's bothering you that much. Then just paint it. It's, but I've been in houses like that have big holes in the basement that the rodents can get into, and they look fine at 10 feet, but when you get up closer, like, the rodents can get in here, and that will cost me a lot of money to fix. They never show those houses. The houses they always show on the home and garden shows, they always look just fine. One of the things we've learned about the renovation shows is often when they come in and redecorate a room, renovate a room, and the couple's all happy and thrilled about it, well, it turns out the couple in the TV show doesn't get to keep the furniture, or they'd have to buy it from the very people who have recommended it. Did you know that? Crazy. Or the one where they go out and buy a house, they're looking for a house to buy. It turns out that they've already bought the house, and it's all stagecraft. Oh, let's look at this house. Oh, yes, this is wonderful. Or they look at two or three other houses to determine if they want that house. But secretly, it turns out that those houses are owned by friends of theirs. They're not, in fact, on the market because, you know what, to get a camera crew into a house is a big deal. There are a lot of releases, a lot of pain in the neck stuff. They don't want to deal with that. Who would want to deal with that? They stage it. They already have friends of theirs who have houses up for sale or just houses. They walk through the houses. I used to live on a block in Manhattan where they used to film a lot of movies. And we lived in one of those townhouses that looked like it deserved a movie. It wasn't anything special, but it looked as though it deserved a movie. And every few weeks, there'd be a casting notice on our door saying, we would like to use your home for a movie. Now, I always called immediately. I always said, yes, we want you to use our home for a movie because I knew something. And I knew that they paid at least $10,000 to shoot a movie in your home. Did you know that? Now, a couple problems. They will leave it a mess. The movie company will leave it a mess and maybe ruin a few pieces, but I didn't care. It was 10,000. Never did we get the call. Never did the scout, the movie scout come to our house and do that. Also, when I was a kid in Maplewood, New Jersey, home decorating companies would come and scout houses to see if they could do test paint. They could put outdoor paint on your home, that they would paint your house for free if they could test the paint. We always said yes. My father was like, please come and paint our house, please. And never did it happen. It's a lifetime of resentments. It's a lifetime of, why didn't this happen? I don't know. I'm Walter Sterling. This is Sterling on Sunday. We get to be together every Sunday night at 10 p.m. to 1 a.m., and we don't talk about politics. That's my message to you. That is my Christmas gift to you. I have never done a show talking about politics, and I'll tell you why. First of all, I'm not any good at it. I'm just not. Secondly, I think it's covered, don't you? Don't you think there are enough shows on the radio about politics? And the third reason is there are only two answers, A or B. Republican or Democrat, A or B. That's it. How could that be entertaining? Oh, it's not. And shows that just do that, they are losing audience every single day. Whereas shows that talk about life, like mine, they're gaining audience every single day. And we have great advertisers and fantastic affiliates. Coming up, I'm going to share with you what it's like to be in Rome on Christmas. And especially what it's like to see the Pope's Mass on Christmas Eve, which is nothing like I thought it would be. But it's a remarkable event. It really is. And then we'll talk about our first jobs on Christmas. It's a lot of people work on Christmas, and they never get to talk about it or cheer about it, but a lot of people do work on Christmas. And it's usually somebody who's 17 or 18, it's their first job, and they want the job, they want to do the work, and they work on Christmas. Working on Christmas is a whole different experience than working any other day of the year. The other thing that we're going to talk about is traveling on Christmas. Traveling on Christmas is almost pornographic travel, because you go into an airport and it's empty, and you want an upgrade from business to first, you'll get the upgrade. And you want an upgrade from coach to business, you'll get the upgrade. That's the great thing about traveling on Christmas. There's nobody there. Airports are empty. Everything's strangely on time. Isn't that amazing? And you'll get the upgrade. That was my experience about traveling on Christmas. Send me an email, waltermsterling@gmail.com. waltermsterling@gmail.com. I would love to see what you're looking at right this second. Right now, use that iPhone, use that expensive cell phone, use it for something good, like taking a picture. That's what it's for. All right, Merry Christmas. Welcome to Sterling at Night, Christmas night. It's just you and me in the 18-wheeler in our car coming back from the relatives we really can't stand. Where are you in the pecking order of your family? Are you the rich family? Are you the poorest family? It all depends a lot on how things go. I have been both. I have been the most well-off member of our family, and I have been the least well-off member of the family. And being the best, being the most well-off, is the goal. You want to be the most well-off, because then you get to give out the best gifts. And I find that to be by far the most satisfactory situation. I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling on Christmas. It's a brand fresh show for you on Christmas night. We are on the radio every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. To me, that is the best time of day to be on the radio. If somebody says to me, "Oh, Walter, you want to do morning drive?" The answer is no. I don't want to do morning drive. And I love when I hear morning drive hosts say, "Well, you know, I love my job, except I don't like getting up at 2 in the morning." Yeah, but you're making the most money. You're making $1 million a year. It's a big deal for you to get up 3 hours earlier than the rest of the world. Oh, you poor baby. It's like the hosts of the Today Show. They're always saying, "Well, I can't wait to not have to get up at 3 in the morning anymore." Right. They're picked up by a limo. They're brought to the studio for the Today Show. They have a incredible buffet, craft services, whatever they want to eat, it's all waiting for them. That's what they get to complain about. It's amazing to me. You know why you don't have any money? You know why you went through Christmas just now and you didn't have enough money? I didn't. I'll tell you why. I was trained on Christmas money this way. I'd go to a savings and loan near my home in Maplewood, New Jersey, and we'd sign up for a Christmas club. Odds are your kids don't know what a Christmas club is, but you'd sign up for a Christmas club. Here's how it worked. I would get a red and pink book. The book was filled with pink coupons printed in green ink. And the coupons would say how much I was going to give to the Christmas club each month. It was either once a month or twice a month. You could put in $10 a coupon, $100, $200, whatever it was. Then in mid or late October or November, you could go and get the money, but you could not take out the money before. You had a year's worth of savings for Christmas. When I got older, I went looking for a bank that would give me a Christmas club, and they're no more. The big chain banks, the Wells Fargo and the Chases, they're no more. And they don't give out Christmas clubs. At the end, you'd get your check, but it gets better. There was no interest on Christmas clubs. But they'd give you a gift. You'd get a gift. A nice bowl, a Santa Claus, a red scarf, but you'd get a nice gift. And they'd promote the Christmas club based on that. How cool was that? Okay, they don't exist anymore. Yeah, maybe some little local mom-and-pop banks that are about to be taken over by Wells Fargo. But by and large, no. There's been a number of lawsuits this year against big banks for doing wacky things with the timing of deposits. Because if a bank has an algorithm set up so that your deposits come in at random or later times than they should, you're going to have overdrafts. You're going to have overdraft fees of usually like $33 a time. $33 for an overdraft. That's where they make their money. That is no-cost money. Oh, set up the algorithm. Every time this one's late, it's $38. One month, I had about $200 worth of overdraft fees. They know they're wrong. Here's my financial tip to you. If you get an overdraft, call the bank and tell them this is crazy, and they'll take off at least half of those charges or all of those charges just out of guilt. But I say the solution to pretty much all of our financial problems at Christmas is a Christmas club. That's the thing. I'm Walter Sterling. Welcome. This is Sterling at Christmas, a fresh show for you, a fresh show. I always wanted to experience Christmas in Rome. I'd see the Pope Mass on TV, as you do, and I wondered about it. I wondered how incredible it was. A couple years ago, I flew to Rome at Christmas time. I planned to spend 10 days there. 10 days in Rome as a single man, not a great idea. But I didn't really understand how to negotiate solitude with vacation. And I hadn't taken a lot of vacations in my alleged career. But I wanted to go to Rome at Christmas time. I figured it would be spectacular and beautiful. And it was, but not in the way I thought. Not in the way I thought. I went to Rome. I stayed at the top of the Spanish Steps, which is their Times Square. Spanish Steps, I don't know how long they've been there, but at the bottom of the Spanish Steps is their shopping area. Beautiful shopping area, all lit up for Christmas. At the top are two hotels. I stayed in the cheaper one, I promise you. And I get there, and one of the things I learned about the Mediterranean is that it's supposed to be sort of warm all year. Mediterranean air is supposed to be about 65 to 75 all year. I get there in end of December. I swear, it's 20 degrees every day. It was cold. And I had a cold. I arrived with a cold, and I had a cold. And it was 20 degrees. And believe me, and I'm there alone. Check in, very nice, real concierge. I have no idea where I'm going to go, what I'm going to do. But it's an amazing city, Rome, because here's a steel frame skyscraper in the heart of their downtown, and then right next to it is a 2,000-year-old ruin pressing up against the brand-new skyscraper. It's a very unusual thing. I highly recommend going to Rome. For all the reasons you know. But I went at Christmas. And the reason I went at Christmas is I wanted to see the whole shebang. Couple things. I went to do the tourist things. I went to see the Sistine Chapel. There's a very long line to see the Sistine Chapel. And then something weird happened. I'm holding a USA Today. I don't know why that became significant, but it was. And a priest came up to me, a young priest, and he looks at me and he says, "Are you American?" I go, "Yeah." "Come with me." Now, there was a good 90-minute line outside the Sistine Chapel. He says, "Come with me." So I follow the priest. I run to the Sistine Chapel. I get in. Priest disappears, and I'm in. It was like a messenger from God. "Walter, you don't have to stand outside. Really, it's okay. Just come on in." It's incredible, as you know. I'm not going to waste your time describing the Sistine Chapel, but it's worth going. The other thing that's interesting about Rome and most of Europe is there's really nothing to eat. There's fine dining and croissants. There were a number of cafes around the Spanish Steps, and they were, you know, coffee, tea, beer, and croissants. That's what you can get. It's beautiful and interesting, but it's not overwhelming. Because one of the things I realized very quickly upon getting into Rome and being involved with Rome is that in Rome, Christmas is not for big decorations on the lawn. Christmas is a serious religious holiday in Rome. And I went to see the Pope's Mass. I wanted to see how it was done. And I saw something at the Pope's Mass I never expected to see. It was surprising to me. And I will share that with you coming up in seconds. Later tonight, we're going to talk about our first jobs on Christmas Day. Many people had to work on Christmas today. Many people seek to work on Christmas because they get triple overtime. Or the workforce is a lot of 17 and 18-year-olds because it's their first job. It's their first job. Sterling on Christmas. All right, I'm Walter Sterling. This is Sterling at Christmas. Welcome to our show. It is a fresh show for Christmas night. It's not a repeat. It's a fresh show for Christmas night. With many of the stars of Sterling on Sunday contributing their Christmas stories, I hope you are enjoying them. I certainly enjoy being with you. Christmas in Rome. A few years ago, I took a trip to Rome on Christmas. At the time, I was traveling a lot as a consultant. I used to be a consultant long before I was a talk show host. And I used to go around the country giving advice to radio stations, most of which they ignored. And therefore, I accumulated a lot of frequent flyer miles. I had a tremendous number of frequent flyer miles on Delta. And I had enough frequent flyer miles on Delta to fly to Rome on a 747, first class, from Newark to Rome, first class. I had seat 1B going to Rome, 1B. I had 1B returning. Here's the trip. I land in Rome. I stay at a hotel at the top of the Spanish Steps. At the bottom of the Spanish Steps is their shopping area. High-end, very high-end shopping area. But I was there because I was curious to see the Pope's Mass. 2 days before Christmas Eve, I go to St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. And there were a couple things about it I never anticipated. First of all, there are no pews at St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. The medieval churches did not have pews. They stood. And it was 3 football fields. It was huge. But around St. Peter's Basilica inside was something I did not expect to see. There were people dressed as businessmen. Suits, ties, very formal, very official, very competent. And all of them had clipboards. And they were rehearsing the Pope's Mass. They were walking where the Pope would walk, where he would stand, where the cameras would be, how long they had stopwatches. I did not realize that it was a well-rehearsed machine. And of course that makes sense. It was a worldwide broadcast with the best broadcasters in the world making sure that the Pope looked good. I didn't expect that. Then I got a gift. I saw these men in their suits and ties with clipboards standing in St. Peter's Basilica against the windows. They were lit by the sunlight. And I took a few pictures of them with their clipboards and their suits because it was something I didn't expect to see. When the film came back, I also got something I did not expect to see. I didn't see the pictures of the gentlemen in their suits and ties and clipboards. What I saw were these rays of light, these thousand-year-old rays of lights going through thousand-year-old dust, hitting the floor in a dramatic, beautiful way. That's what I was meant to see. The film picked up the rays of light through the dust in St. Peter's Basilica. I bet that dust had been there 1,000 years. It was beautiful. That was one of the gifts I got. Another gift I got was on Christmas Day in Rome. It was nothing like I expected. I figured Christmas Day in Rome would be like Christmas Day in New York or Los Angeles or Chicago. It'd be festive. Lots of lights, lots of decorations, people in the street talking. No. Christmas Day in Rome is a high religious holiday. And the most religious holiday. There is nobody on the streets. There is nobody outside. There are no lights. It is something else. It was the first time that I understood why they call it the Eternal City. Because Rome on Christmas Day feels like I'm in a different dimension. Felt like I was in a different universe. That all of the laws of nature had disappeared and I was engulfed in a spirituality that I had never felt before, that this was so holy, so sacred to be near the Vatican on Christmas Day. It just was calming and assuring and life-affirming and the way things were supposed to be. No restaurants were open, no bars, certainly no bars. Most of the churches weren't open. The city was shut down on Christmas Day because my job on Christmas Day in Rome was to be home, to sit and be quiet and meditate on the great things in life. That's what it was for. I didn't expect that much silence. The silence in Rome on Christmas Day, it's not oppressive or scary. It's full of life. The silence in Rome on Christmas Day was just full of life. You could feel it. You could feel the spirit. You could feel whatever higher power you believed in was there. But there's no one else outside. I was the only one outside. I was staying in a nice hotel. There was no room service on Christmas Day. You were just going to sit and behave. But that's what surprised me about the Pope's Mass on Christmas Eve, is how well rehearsed it was. How, to the second, they knew what they were going to do for the Pope and for the world in the presentation of that Mass. And it's not easy to get into. It's a Super Bowl ticket. It's like the Catholic Super Bowl ticket to go see the Pope's Mass. The next day, after Christmas, I'm staying at this hotel, and I'm alone. And I'm at the concierge's desk, and a young woman, my guess 28, came up to the desk, and she started talking to the concierge, and I'm standing there, and the concierge, a smart fellow, introduced us. And I come to learn that Gabrielle, that is her name, Gabrielle was there with her parents, a 28-year-old single woman with her parents, in Rome on a holiday, is in a very interesting situation because people don't want, you know, once you're over 12, you don't want to stay in the same hotel room as your parents, but there she was in the same hotel room as her parents. And I'm there alone. And I looked at Gabrielle and I said, well, you want to go get some coffee? Do you want to go get a croissant? Because as I mentioned, the only thing to eat in Rome is a croissant or a full-course gourmet meal. There's no middle. It's bizarre. True of most of Europe. True of the south of France. Now, Gabrielle and I go down the Spanish steps, and we go to a cafe. There are no coffee shops in Rome. These are cafes that have been there 280 years. Napoleon went to these cafes. And now we sit down. And I learned some things about Gabrielle. I find that she is there alone. She's not from Sweden. Far more interesting, she's from Switzerland. Now, I knew no one named, you know, Swiss. And I went to school in New Jersey. And in New Jersey, the nice girls I went to high school with, they were named like Susan and Janet. A lot of Janets and Barbaras, a lot of Barbaras. But this was Gabrielle. I knew no Gabrielles. Just the name alone takes you to a very good and a very wrong place. And she was pretty. She was not scary pretty. You know, there are a couple layers of pretty. There are girls women you can talk to, and they're pretty. There are women you can sit back and go, I can't believe this walks the earth, because they're so ethereal, beautiful. And there are women who you work with who you have no opinions about. Oh, God help you if you have any opinions about them. You can't have any opinions about the attractiveness of anyone you work with. Immediately, you'll have to go for sensitivity training and to be retrained. You'll have to go for training. Well, no, I can see if she's pretty or not. I can say, no. You'll have to be trained. it's the worst thing that ever happened. But Gabrielle was approachable pretty. She was pretty and approachable. And we had a nice chat. We had a nice time. I had a cold. And in my mind, that really cut down on romantic possibilities. We went back to the hotel. And Gabrielle kind of like, you know, could I see your room? And I kind of like, no, because I have a cold. I don't feel good. I don't feel like having a party right now. Let's see how it goes tomorrow. The next day came, and I'll share with you what happened then. My name is Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling on Christmas. It's our Christmas together in the 18-wheeler, heading to the Love truck stop, to the Pilot truck stop, looking everywhere for cheaper gas. You know where you're going to find the cheapest gas? You're going to find the cheapest gas in Ohio. That's where the cheapest gas is. You're going to find the most expensive gas in New York City and California. But in Ohio, it's down to $2.38. And whoever thought that would be cheap? Isn't it tragic that we've come to the point in life where we think that's cheap? Of course it's not. It's ridiculous. And I have a website. It's Walter Sterling Show. Walter Sterling Show. And there you can find archives of every show we've ever done. And you can become a Midnight Misfit. Yes, a Midnight Misfit. What does that mean? It means you find out why you don't fit in and what you have to do as a person who you don't fit in. It's not genetic. It has to do with the fact that some of us are lone wolves. We like to sit in the back of the cave, be given a problem, chew on it, and come out with a solution. To you and me, the very worst thing that we can hear at work is some clown in front of the room saying, you know, I believe in team spirit. Everybody works together here as a team. I want team players. Really? Don't you just want the answer? Do we have to have team players? Is that really necessary? I mean, look at how poorly it goes as a team. Look at the Browns. It doesn't always work out to be a team player. But if you're a misfit like me, there's a membership card that explains what you can do and what you can't do as a misfit and how important corned beef is to our lives, how to get along. And there's a decoder card. When I give out secret messages, you will have the information you need to decode it and shame all your friends because they don't have decoder cards. Look at that. It's Christmas night with Walter Sterling. Sterling at Christmas. Great to be in the car with you, the 18-wheeler. There's nothing, I hate to use the word because it sounds like girly, but there's nothing cozier on a night like this than to be in the cab of an 18-wheeler where everything is right. The engine is making all the right humming noises. It's happy. The glow from the dash is just perfect, makes everything look terrific. Your coffee is just the right temperature in the big Pilot mug. Everything's great. Love being in the car at this time of night because it's just you and me. I'm 14 inches from this microphone. You're 14 inches from the speaker. This is a level of intimacy that no other medium can even begin to offer and a level of entertainment that no one else begins to offer.
Ho, 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 true crime fans. It's retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. On this week's episode of Confessions of Retired NYPD Detective, I tell the story of a cop who had one drink too many the night before Christmas and fell asleep under a desk in the Bronx District Attorney's office. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
One of the things they say about podcasts is that crime podcasts are the most popular. People want to hear crime podcasts. And I'm like, anybody can write that. I want a real detective to tell crime stories, and that's what we have with Vic Ferrari, a retired New York City police detective who tells great crime stories for you every Sunday night, Sterling on Sunday between 10 p.m. and 1 a.m. East Coast, 7 p.m. and 10 p.m. West Coast. I was in Rome on Christmas, and I highly recommend seeing how it works because the Pope's Mass on Christmas is a much bigger enterprise than at first I thought. It is rehearsed. They have grown-ups, very official people with clipboards, making sure that the crew goes there, The Pope knows where to walk. Everything is rehearsed. Everything is planned. It's a big enterprise. It's big business for the Catholic Church. Vatican on high alert that everything's going to be just fine. I went to see that. Now it's the day after Christmas. And the concierge in the hotel I was staying at introduces me to a woman who's also standing there. And her name was Gabrielle. The thing about Gabrielle is I grew up in Jersey. You don't know any Gabrielles. You know Janet and Barbara and Kathy. That's who you know. Colleen. You don't know any Gabrielles. Well, here I am with a Gabrielle, and I'm alone. And it turns out she's about 28, and she's alone. She's staying with her parents. There's nothing worse for an adult than to have to share a hotel room with your parents. But if you're a single woman in a strange city, it's even worse. Now, she was from Switzerland. I didn't know anyone from Switzerland. I knew Swiss Miss Hot Chocolate. That's about as close as I got. Swiss Miss Hot Chocolate. That was as close as I got. But here's Gabrielle from Switzerland. And not from Sweden, Switzerland. That to me was a whole different world. It was an extraordinary thing. We go to get a croissant. Because in Rome and most European cities, really they're scrambled eggs, croissants, and 150-pound dinners. There's no middle. There's no sandwich shop. I didn't find any. The panini, that's not a sandwich. That's a meal. So I didn't find anything like that. It was not easy to find food. I know that sounds crazy in Rome. By the way, you know what I did in Rome? I rented a car, which is very much like renting a car in Manhattan. It's the similar traffic pattern, similar way of thinking about the road. Just go. Just get in the car and go. And I drove out to Margherita, Italy, because I wanted to have a margherita pizza in Margherita, Italy. And you know what? It was fantastic. There actually are margherita pizzas in Margherita, Italy. Didn't expect it. Just like, if you go to China and you want Chinese food, you're going to be scared. Chinese food in China is nothing like the Chinese food here. It's scary. It has ingredients that you don't know. They're not going to tell you. It's terrifying. And, you know, it's a whole plot against us anyway in China. Everything in China is a plot against us. I think we can agree on this. Well, now I'm having a croissant with Danielle. No, not Danielle. With Gabrielle. I'm having a croissant with Gabrielle. And she's explaining to me that she's there with her parents. And she lives in Switzerland. And I think she worked for the government. She was an administrator of some sort. It wasn't clear to me. The other weird thing about it, this was weird. At the time, I carried a camera with me everywhere. It was my hobby. But you know what? For some reason, I never took a picture of Gabrielle. I don't know why. At the time, I'm thinking, why don't you take a picture of her? And I didn't. I never made that permanent. The image of Gabrielle is in my head. Dark blonde, big greenish eyes, tall, pretty. And now we're coming up on New Year's Eve. And Gabrielle says to me, when are you leaving? And I said, I'm leaving on New Year's Eve day. And her eyes got very big and she says, stay. Stay on New Year's Eve. And I'm like, oh. And here was my fear. I had a frequent flyer ticket that said 1B. 747 1B on Delta. Delta at the time was the airline. It has the best first class. You wanted to be in 1B on Delta. That was the goal. I had a 1B. Gabrielle is saying, leave the next day or two. I'm like, I'm in 1B. I didn't say that to her, but that was the issue. I said to her, I already have a ticket back. she said, change it. And I'm like, change it. I was so afraid. I was so insecure about that seat that I'm thinking, if I try to change it during the holiday, they may not give it to me. Now, what I was stupid about is that if I have a frequent flyer ticket issued, it is as good as cash. It is one of the only levels of tickets that you can change. No problem. They're happy to help you. They're happy to continue the reward. But I didn't think that through. All I knew was that I had 1B. Gabrielle looks at me as in stay, as in you're going to be happy if you stay, Walter. What I didn't know, which clearly now is quite a bit, what I didn't know about New Year's in Rome is because Rome is shut down at Christmas and Christmas Eve, all the celebrating that is done in other cities on Christmas and Christmas Eve is all concentrated into one night in Rome. New Year's Eve is the night of the year in Rome. Every holiday, every celebration is going to take place on New Year's Eve in Rome. Any debauchery, any crimes, any sin, that's when it's going to happen. The city explodes with joy and excitement. And therefore, if a woman from Switzerland is looking at you saying, stay, she knows that, even if you don't. And I'm like, well, let me think about it. Because I'm a genius, I'm like, let me think about this, Gabrielle. Let me consider this possibility. And then I go back to my hotel room because I have this cold and the sinus, and I just didn't feel good. You know, I just didn't feel like testosterone on a plate. I just, that wasn't my feeling. I had already seen how the Pope's Mass worked. I was very excited about that. There were a lot of things that I really enjoyed. And I had eaten this croissant, and there I was with Gabrielle, who said, stay. I'll tell you what happened on New Year's Eve coming up in just seconds. It's Christmas night. This is Sterling at Christmas. I'm Walter M. Sterling. It is a privilege to be with you in the 18-wheeler in the back seat of the car, coming away from all of the incredibly annoying relatives. I hope you got what you wanted, and I hope you got more than a resentment that you didn't get what you wanted. That is the challenge as an adult. Did you not get a resentment? Isn't that it? I have a great website. It's called Walter Sterling Show. You can find out everything about the show, everything about our Midnight Misfit Club at Walter Sterling Show. This is Sterling on Christmas. So there I am in Rome at Christmas time, and I'd seen the Pope's Mass, and I saw what an incredible production it was. And I'm staying at the top of the Spanish Steps, overlooking the most expensive stores in the world. And now I'm having croissants with Gabrielle. Gabrielle is from Switzerland. I didn't know anyone from Switzerland. I only knew a few exotic people from the Jersey Shore. And they weren't named Gabrielle. They were named Stan. And she's saying to me, stay over New Year's Eve. The problem is I had a ticket to go home on New Year's Eve. I had a frequent flyer mile ticket to go home. And it wasn't just any frequent flyer mile ticket. It was coveted among all people who travel a lot for a living, like me. It was 1B. I was in seat 1B. I was afraid that if I called and moved it from New Year's Eve day, which is when I was supposed to leave, to a few days later, I'd lose it. I didn't know why. It made no sense because, in fact, a frequent flyer ticket is like cash. They respect it. There are no problems. You cash in frequent flyer miles. They're happy that you've cashed them in. It's a whole different thing. All right. And I look at her and I say, you know, I'm scheduled to go home then. I'm not supposed to be here New Year's Eve. I'm scheduled to go home. And she looks at me like, you're insane. You will stay. Because she was there with her parents. And no single woman wants to be at a hotel in Rome with her parents. But there she was. And there I was, her ticket out. Her ticket out. Well, this is what I did. I'm like, Gabrielle or 1B? Gabrielle or 1B? Gabrielle or 1B? And what did I do? With my Jersey guilt, my determination to have the vacation I had planned in my head, what did I do? New Year's Eve comes, 1B.
Christmas for me means Diospyros virginiana. It's the scientific name for a plant which grows in the eastern United States, the persimmon tree. The fruit from that tree, specifically the trees, next to my Aunt Maxine's house in rural Morgan County, Indiana. The story begins in the late fall of each year, since grade school, probably a month before Thanksgiving. My cousins and I would hike back into the woods where a cluster of the trees stood, mixed in with the pines, maples, and oaks. North American persimmons will only grow when there is at least one male and one female tree. One tree will usually not do the job. How you tell them apart is still a mystery to me. Our mission in the autumn chill is to beat the squirrels, birds, and other woodland creatures to gather as many persimmons as we can. The small, round, brownish-yellowish color fruit is about half the size of an apple. It is bitter to the taste when it is too young, but it matures into a sweet berry that goes into the most delicious pudding known to man. At least this man. And it's only available at Thanksgiving and Christmas. But before the pudding can be made, the gathering must happen. Already at the stand, my cousins and I see that the creatures have taken their toll. Many half-eaten berries are on the ground, their seeds exposed. But the trees are still full, and it will be those where we set our sights. Because I was always big for my age, I wore Husky brand jeans from Sears. Mom said I was just big-boned. Thanks, Mom. It was my job to shake and otherwise persuade the trees to assist us. The skinny trees were easy. I could use my arms and hands to shake them and quickly drop the bounty. The trees with the thicker trunks were a different story. I had to gather all my muster and start ramming the trunks with my body, not unlike a tackle slamming into a dummy at football practice. It was quite a challenge, but my thought of the pudding inspired me to keep ramming. As I rammed, the berries would start to fall, and my cousins would retrieve them. I developed a technique for pacing the ramming at a certain clip. This would allow the tree to develop a motion which assisted in the shaking. My cousins, well-versed in the art of gathering, quickly filled grocery sacks and buckets with the fruit. There must be enough for pudding at Thanksgiving and Christmas. There's no such thing as too many. After several hours, we shook and gathered as many as we could. Some of the fruit remained on the bigger trees, daring us to get them. We could not meet their challenge. I was sore and worn out, and we had as many containers as we could handle, going back to Aunt Maxine's. Perhaps a much larger challenge remained, and it would be handled by my mother. We would bring the containers back to our home, where Mom faced the enormous challenge of pulping the berries. Each year, it was her finest hour, or finest hours. The persimmons set for a week or so, allowing any of the young ones to ripen. On a designated day, Mom would get out her strainer and begin the process. The inside of a persimmon is a wondrous mix of pulp and seeds, intertwined like the thorns in Spock's nerve endings when the Star Trek crew fought the brain cells on the planet Deneva. Each persimmon must be scraped by hand on the strainer, allowing the fruit to drop through and the seeds to stay behind. It's a tough job. On pulping day, Mom would say that we collected too many persimmons. And she had a point. Through patience and determination, she eventually got through every persimmon. The containers of fruit translated into about 4 cups of pulp, 2 for Thanksgiving and another 2 for Christmas. On Thanksgiving Eve and Christmas Eve, Mom retrieved her copy of the Whitley County, Indiana persimmon pudding recipe and began mixing. It uses basically the same ingredients as in a pumpkin pie, using persimmon pulp instead of pumpkin. Into her Guardian Service roasting pan went the golden mixture. Glass lid placed on top, 350 degrees for 40 to 60 minutes. Dessert time after the big dinners on the two holidays was the glorious moment. The pudding went into the bowls and the whipping cream went on top. Now you know why I wore husky pants. During those years, those were the closest moments to heaven I experienced. After high school, the trees became too big to shake, and we had to leave the persimmons for the woodland creatures. Nature eventually wins, just like old man time. A few years ago, I asked my wife if we could give persimmon pudding another shot. We still have Mom's Guardian Service, glass lid still intact. She'd be very proud. But now we get pulp frozen at a farm market. The pulp comes from a company in Orleans, Indiana, which I assume has a far more efficient way of pulping the persimmons than my mom did. The pudding, of course, is still wonderful. The recipe is the same, the flavor is still there, but somehow I think it tastes differently. Who knew that the most essential ingredient was the effort involved in making it possible?
The great Charles Van Zandt, a member of the Sterling on Sunday team of producers and writers. It's great to have that story. And I don't know what a persimmon tastes like. Do you? I have no idea if that's a good idea, but I'm sure that if Charles liked it, then it must be pretty darn good. All right, we're on Christmas night. This is Sterling at Christmas. In the 18-wheeler, in the backseat of the car, you and I are enjoying Christmas night together, and I feel pretty lucky about that. Coming up, I'm going to share with you my very first Christmas working. And, of course, it was in radio, so it didn't feel like work, but it was work. And, you know, one of the most annoying things that has happened in the past few years to Christmas, and it's just wrong, and it should be illegal, I don't think you should have to pay for your kid to see Santa at the mall. It's a big business. You could pay $100, $200 for photos of your kid with Santa. And you could pay $25 to $50 for your kid to get on Santa's knee. And I just think that's wrong. It goes against the spirit of Christmas. When you and I walk into a mall or a big department store, we've already committed to spend quite enough money. We've already done a big investment in Christmas just going there. To pay to sit on Santa's lap, it doesn't seem right to me. In fact, it seems very wrong. And there are a lot of people, here's a shocker, who can't afford that. They can't afford it. And their kid walks by and goes, I want to see Santa. And mommy and daddy are standing there like, We don't have the 25 or 30 bucks. They're thinking that, but they can't say it. It's a lousy thing to do to parents, to charge for the kid to sit on Santa's lap. All right, I want to hear from you. I want you to send me a picture of whatever you're looking at right now for Christmas. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. I'll post it on Instagram. I'll post it on my Facebook, Sterling on Sunday. All right, welcome to Sterling at Christmas. It's Christmas time with Walter M. Sterling. It's Christmas night. I hope you don't have a night filled with resentments of all the things that you should have gotten but you didn't get. Is that your problem tonight? Is that your challenge tonight? I hope not. I've always felt that these were the easy holidays. The psychiatrists and psychologists always say things like, well, you know, Christmas and Thanksgiving and New Year's are hard to get through. No, they're not. If you're single and you're alone, that doesn't mean you're lonely. It just means that you live alone. If you want to experience a holiday, all you and I have to do is go outside. We just have to walk through a shopping district and look at the windows, go to a church, go to a homeless shelter, help out. There are many ways to participate in this holiday and not feel lonely. To me, much worse holidays are Memorial Day, the 4th of July, and Labor Day, because those are the holidays where I have to be invited in. I can't just go to your pool. You have to invite me into your pool. It's a very different thing.
Ho, 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 true crime fans. It's retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. On this week's episode of Confessions of Retired NYPD Detective, I tell the story of a cop who had one drink too many the night before Christmas and fell asleep under a desk in the Bronx District Attorney's office. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Merry Christmas, Midnight Misfits, and Merry Christmas, Walter Sterling. Hi, it's Dan Gaffney.
The Gaffneys. We're going to have the Gaffneys tonight.
Merry Christmas. Hi, it's Dan Gaffney.
And Becky Gaffney.
Tonight, we're going to be joined by some of our children with a Christmas story.
Glory to God in the highest.
Tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
Did you ever work on Christmas Day? Did you ever have the experience of actually going to work on Christmas Day? A lot of people in their first job, when they're 17 or 18, they wind up working on Christmas Day. Did you work on Christmas Day today? How was that experience? Did you work at a Pilot truck stop, a Love truck stop? Was that your experience? It's an interesting time because, in a way, it's the easiest day of the year. People who normally are not pleasant are suddenly pleasant. That's what I noticed. People who normally aren't happy are suddenly happy. And my first Christmas working was when I was 17, and it was at a radio station. Our Christmases went like this. We had Christmas on Christmas Day, Christmas morning. That's when we had Christmas. Not Christmas Eve, not the night before, not Christmas night. It was Christmas Day. And it was an important holiday, obviously, to my parents. They made a big deal out of it. As they should have. When I told my mother, I said, look, I'm going to work on Christmas Day. She was very sad. The radio station I worked at is what was known as a daytimer, of which there hardly aren't any anymore. These are stations that signed on when the sun came up, and they signed off when the sun went down. There are technical reasons for that I won't bore you with, but they used to exist. The first job I worked at was at a daytimer. It went on the air when the sun went up, and it went off when the sun went down. The owner of the station said to me, would you like to work Christmas? I'm like, yeah, because, you know, I was home from, I wasn't home from anything. I was still in high school. I said, yeah, but it was the first year I had my driver's license. That's why I could do it. I had a driver's license. And he said, okay, sign on the station. And then you're here all day and sign it off. I'm like, this is amazing. I was the kid. I had never signed on the station. That was for the morning man. The morning man signed on the station, not the kid. The kid maybe signed off the station if he behaved. That was part one. Part two was that the radio station was 50 miles from my home. And that meant a 50-mile drive on Route 22 in New Jersey. 50-mile drive. It was like nothing I ever expected. Nothing. I make myself get up at 5 that morning. It's a 1 hour and 15-minute drive. I had done it many times. I knew exactly how long it was. I drove on Route 22, easily the busiest road in America, easily the heavily commerced road. There are stores and diners on every side for the entire length of that trip. The entire length of the trip. And I get in my 1963 Dodge Dart. Yes, I had a Dodge Dart. The Dodge Dart had a couple interesting features. For example, it had a laugh box. A laugh box was this. You push the button and it laughed hysterically for 10 seconds. As a teenager, I thought this was a fantastic feature. And then it had a two-tone trunk. Half of the trunk was one shade of tan, and the other half of the trunk was rust. Those were the two tones. That's how it had aged in the sun, God knows where. And the back seat, not so pretty. I get in the car, to drive an hour and 15 minutes in solitude. There was a light coating of snow on Route 22 in New Jersey, and I'm supposed to drive an hour and 15 minutes to get to the radio station, and I'm panicked. I'm panicked the whole trip because I'm afraid I won't get there on time, but of course I would get there on time. And then this is what I didn't expect. 50-mile trip, Route 22 in New Jersey, on Christmas morning at 6 a.m., I did not see one other truck, not one other car, not one cop on the side of the road, not one store open. There was nothing. It was completely barren. It was surreal. It was like a movie set of Route 22, and they hadn't yet cast the movie. They hadn't yet put up the equipment. It was weird. Now, you know, and there's the Leaning Tower of Pizza. No, really, the Leaning Tower of Pizza. And there's the lumber mill with the giant lumberjack out front. But nobody, there was nobody else. I get to the most rural part of New Jersey, Warren County, which is strangely unchanged in many, many years. Nothing in Warren County ever changes. I drive on Route 31. Again, nobody's out there. And I get to the radio station. And I unlock it. It used to be a house. Now, of course, it's a radio station. I unlock the front door, and I go in, and I turn it on. Now, it's in a bank building. No, I'm sorry. I screwed up. It went into a house. But first, when I went there, it was in a bank building. It was on the second floor of a bank building in downtown Washington, New Jersey. The second floor of a bank building. I go up the steps. I unlock the door. I turn on the transmitter. And now we're ready to go. And it's, what is it, 7:15 in the morning, and I got to go till 4:30 in the afternoon. But I'm not worried because I'm at a radio station. But there are some things that I didn't anticipate. And one of the things was I'm thinking, well, I'm in this small rural community. There are going to be people listening to this, knowing it's their radio station. And I'll bet you somebody from the community comes to the radio station and presents me with a gift basket. That somebody from the community presents me with food or treats or snacks or Christmassy things. That's what I'm thinking in my small brain. I turn on the station. Now, the program director was a real program director. It's surprising how good he was. And he had prepared the Christmas program. It was pre-recorded. All I had to do was play the tapes, the reel-to-reel tapes. And even if they didn't work, he had taken all of the music, typed a log for each album, what cuts to play, and when to play the commercials, because they had sold Christmas Day. It was an impressive operation, really, now that I think about it, and no automation, of course not. And I will tell you about the townsfolk bringing me gifts coming up in just seconds. My name is Walter M. Sterling, and you and I are spending Christmas night together. What a treat. What a special event. And I have a website. It's Walter Sterling Show. You can find out everything about the show and sign up to be a member of the Midnight Misfits, because if you're listening right now, you are a Midnight Misfit. Sterling on Christmas. All right, I'm Walter Sterling. This is Sterling at Christmas. Welcome to our show. It is a fresh show for Christmas night. It's not a repeat. It's a fresh show for Christmas night. With many of the stars of Sterling on Sunday contributing their Christmas stories, I hope you are enjoying them. I certainly enjoy being with you. Christmas in Rome. A few years ago, I took a trip to Rome on Christmas. At the time, I was traveling a lot as a consultant. I used to be a consultant long before I was a talk show host. And I used to go around the country giving advice to radio stations, most of which they ignored. And therefore, I accumulated a lot of frequent flyer miles. I had a tremendous number of frequent flyer miles on Delta. And I had enough frequent flyer miles on Delta to fly to Rome on a 747 first class from Newark to Rome, first class. I had seat 1B going to Rome. 1B. I had 1B returning. Here's the trip. I land in Rome. I stay at a hotel at the top of the Spanish Steps. At the bottom of the Spanish Steps is their shopping area. High-end, very high-end shopping area. But I was there because I was curious to see the Pope's Mass. 2 days before Christmas Eve, I go to St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. And there were a couple things about it I never anticipated. First of all, there are no pews at St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. The medieval churches did not have pews. They stood. And it was 3 football fields. It was huge. But around St. Peter's Basilica inside was something I did not expect to see. There were people dressed as businessmen. Suits, ties, very formal, very official, very competent, and all of them had clipboards. And they were rehearsing the Pope's Mass. They were walking where the Pope would walk, where he would stand, where the cameras would be, how long they had stopwatches. I did not realize that it was a well-rehearsed machine. And of course that makes sense. It was a worldwide broadcast with the best broadcasters in the world making sure that the Pope looked good. I didn't expect that. Then I got a gift. I saw these men in their suits and ties with clipboards standing in St. Peter's Basilica against the windows. They were lit by the sunlight. And I took a few pictures of them with their clipboards and their suits because it was something I didn't expect to see. When the film came back, I also got something I did not expect to see. I didn't see the pictures of the gentlemen in their suits and ties and clipboards. What I saw were these rays of light, these thousand-year-old rays of lights going through thousand-year-old dust, hitting the floor in a dramatic, beautiful way. That's what I was meant to see. The film picked up the rays of light through the dust in St. Peter's Basilica. I bet that dust had been there 1,000 years. It was beautiful. That was one of the gifts I got. Another gift I got was on Christmas Day in Rome. It was nothing like I expected. I figured Christmas Day in Rome would be like Christmas Day in New York or Los Angeles or Chicago. It'd be festive. Lots of lights, lots of decorations, people in the street talking. No. Christmas Day in Rome is a high religious holiday. And the most religious holiday. There is nobody on the streets. There is nobody outside. There are no lights. It is something else. It was the first time that I understood why they call it the Eternal City. Because Rome on Christmas Day feels like I'm in a different dimension. Felt like I was in a different universe. That all of the laws of nature had disappeared and I was engulfed in a spirituality that I had never felt before, that this was so holy, so sacred to be near the Vatican on Christmas Day. It just was calming and assuring and life-affirming and the way things were supposed to be. No restaurants were open, no bars, certainly no bars. Most of the churches weren't open. The city was shut down on Christmas Day because my job on Christmas Day in Rome was to be home, to sit and be quiet and meditate on the great things in life. That's what it was for. I didn't expect that much silence. The silence in Rome on Christmas Day, it's not oppressive or scary. It's full of life. the silence in Rome on Christmas Day was just full of life. You could feel it. You could feel the spirit. You could feel whatever higher power you believed in was there. But there's no one else outside. I was the only one outside. I was staying in a nice hotel. There was no room service on Christmas Day. You were just going to sit and behave. But that's what surprised me about the Pope's Mass on Christmas Eve, is how well rehearsed it was. How, to the second, they knew what they were going to do for the Pope and for the world in the presentation of that Mass. And it's not easy to get into. It's a Super Bowl ticket. It's like the Catholic Super Bowl ticket to go see the Pope's Mass. The next day, after Christmas, I'm staying at this hotel, and I'm alone. And I'm at the concierge's desk. And a young woman, my guess 28, came up to the desk. And she started talking to the concierge, and I'm standing there, and the concierge, a smart fellow, introduced us. And I come to learn that Gabrielle, that is her name, Gabrielle was there with her parents, a 28-year-old single woman with her parents in Rome on a holiday, is in a very interesting situation, because people don't want, you know, once you're over 12, you don't want to stay in the same hotel room as your parents. But there she was in the same hotel room as her parents. And I'm there alone. And I looked at Gabrielle and I said, well, you want to go get some coffee? Do you want to go get a croissant? Because as I mentioned, the only thing to eat in Rome is a croissant or a full course gourmet meal. There's no middle. It's bizarre. True of most of Europe, true of the south of France. Now, Gabrielle and I go down the Spanish steps, and we go to a cafe. There are no coffee shops in Rome. These are cafes that have been there 280 years. Napoleon went to these cafes. And now we sit down, and I learn some things about Gabrielle. I find that she is there alone. She's not from Sweden. Far more interesting. She's from Switzerland. Now, I knew no one named, you know, Swiss. And I went to school in New Jersey. And in New Jersey, the nice girls I went to high school with, they were named like Susan and Janet. A lot of Janets and Barbaras. A lot of Barbaras. But this was Gabrielle. I knew no Gabrielles. Just the name alone takes you to a very good and a very wrong place. And she was pretty. She was not scary pretty. You know, there are a couple layers of pretty. There are girls women you can talk to, and they're pretty. There are women you can sit back and go, I can't believe this walks the earth, because they're so ethereal, beautiful. And there are women who you work with who you have no opinions about. Oh, God help you if you have any opinions about them. You can't have any opinions about the attractiveness of anyone you work with. Immediately, you'll have to go for sensitivity training and to be retrained. You'll have to go for training. Well, no, I can see if she's pretty or not. I can say, no, you'll have to be trained. It's the worst thing that ever happened. But Gabrielle was approachable pretty. She was pretty and approachable. And we had a nice chat. We had a nice time. I had a cold. And in my mind, that really cut down on romantic possibilities. We went back to the hotel. And Gabrielle kind of like, you know, could I see your room? And I kind of like, no, because I have a cold. I don't feel good. I don't feel like having a party right now. Let's see how it goes tomorrow. The next day came, and I'll share with you what happened then. My name is Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling on Christmas. It's our Christmas together in the 18-wheeler, heading to the Love truck stop, to the Pilot truck stop, looking everywhere for cheaper gas. You know where you're going to find the cheapest gas? You're going to find the cheapest gas in Ohio. That's where the cheapest gas is. You're going to find the most expensive gas in New York City and California. But in Ohio, it's down to $2.38. And whoever thought that would be cheap? Isn't it tragic that we've come to the point in life where we think that's cheap? Of course it's not. It's ridiculous. And I have a website. It's Walter Sterling Show. Walter Sterling Show. And there you can find archives of every show we've ever done. And you can become a Midnight Misfit. Yes, a Midnight Misfit. What does that mean? It means you find out why you don't fit in and what you have to do as a person who you don't fit in. It's not genetic. It has to do with the fact that some of us are lone wolves. We like to sit in the back of the cave, be given a problem, chew on it, and come out with a solution. To you and me, the very worst thing that we can hear at work is some clown in front of the room saying, you know, I believe in team spirit. Everybody works together here as a team. I want team players. Really? Don't you just want the answer? Do we have to have team players? Is that really necessary? I mean, look at how poorly it goes as a team. Look at the Browns. It doesn't always work out to be a team player. But if you're a misfit like me, there's a membership card that explains what you can do and what you can't do as a misfit and how important corned beef is to our lives, how to get along. And there's a decoder card. When I give out secret messages, you will have the information you need to decode it. And shame all your friends because they don't have decoder cards. This is Sterling on Christmas. We're enjoying Christmas night together. All right. Welcome, my Midnight Misfits. Welcome to Sterling on Christmas. It's a special show that you and I get to do together. I love being on the radio. I love being on the radio with you. Midnight Misfits. What you do is you go to Walter Sterling Show and click the tab that says Midnight Misfits. There you will be able to sign in and become a Midnight Misfit and get a Midnight Misfit membership card. The way you know you're a Midnight Misfit is you go to work for the third shift, the late shift. And when you arrive for the late shift, there are a couple things that are obvious. One is HR never, ever visits. Number two, the vending machine is always empty. And number three, there is evidence that there was a birthday party during the day that you were not invited to with the good snacks, the good chocolate chip cookies. And what have you got? There's one oatmeal raisin cookie left. That's all that's there. One oatmeal raisin cookie left. All right. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Ho, 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 true crime fans. It's retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. On this week's episode of Confessions of Retired NYPD Detective, I tell the story of a cop who had one drink too many the night before Christmas and fell asleep under a desk in the Bronx District Attorney's office. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
I think that moment has arrived, don't you? I think it's time to enjoy that moment.
You're a dinosaur, Sipowitz.
I'm a dinosaur.
You jeopardize that collar because it sticks in your throat on first grade.
It sticks in my throat, how you got it?
Every white guy in the department with second grade thinks he should have gotten my grade promotion. Half of you guys think I got it on my back.
Hi, I'm retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to tell a Christmas story. So it was the night before Christmas in the early 90s, and two Bronx cops unfortunately got stuck making an arrest. Neither cop wanted the arrest, and one cop fell on the grenade and decided to process it. That night, the prisoner became sick, so the cop had to take the prisoner to a local hospital for treatment. While this cop's at the hospital, he notices that there's a bunch of nurses having a little bit of a party in the back. NYPD members are forbidden for drinking alcohol on duty, but he figures, who's going to know? He goes back there and has a couple of drinks with the doctors and nurses. A little while later, his prisoner's ready. He calls for a radio car. Another car shows up. He takes the prisoner down to Bronx Central Booking for lodging. While he's down at Bronx Central Booking, he realizes he's got to be back at 7 o'clock the following morning to speak to a district attorney, and he doesn't want to drive all the way home upstate to turn around and come back. So he's starting to get groggy from the alcohol. He decides to go up to the fourth floor, finds an empty office, and he falls asleep under the desk. The following morning, the district attorney's office has his arrest folder. They're calling his name. He's nowhere to be found. They call the precinct. The precinct says he never came into work today. This sets off bells and whistles. The next thing you know, you got supervisors from the borough and one police plaza down at the Bronx Criminal Court looking for this guy. Now you've got emergency service down there. They're there with bloodhounds. They're going through the entire building. About 10 o'clock in the morning, this cop wakes up underneath the desk. He's groggy, a little hungover, jumps in the elevator, decides he's going to go downstairs and process his arrest. He steps off the elevator and he walks into a buzzsaw of angry supervisors that want to know where the hell he's been. It was obvious by his disheveled appearance, smell alcohol in his breath, and he couldn't explain where he was for 3 hours and he's still wearing the uniform from the night before, that he was still intoxicated. He was immediately placed on suspension on Christmas Day. The union fought for his job. They changed it to modified assignment, and what happened was he was sent to the farm. The farm is an NYPD rehabilitation center in upstate New York where he dried out for a couple of months. He returned to work a couple of months later, and then a funny thing happened. Soon, the New York City Fire Department called. He had taken the test and passed. He quietly resigned from the NYPD and was hired by the fire department, where he went to enjoy a 25-year career. So sometimes something's bad and it turns around to be good. So that's my Christmas story for this year. Be sure to check out my new book, The NYPD's Flying Circus, Cops, Crime, and Chaos. And Merry Christmas, everybody.
Vic Ferrari is just the best. He gives us the best stories every week on Sterling on Sunday. I hope you enjoyed that. And I hope you get his book. He has a great website on Amazon. He has a great store for his books. Definitely worth the time and trouble. He's a hoot. He's just a hoot. All right. It's good to be with you on Christmas night. What a treat to be with you and to be able to share this time and to be able to have a fresh radio show for you on Christmas night, where everything else is a repeat. Everything else is stale. There's nothing worse than a repeat of a talk show, because that's like bad fish. Why would anybody do that? I have too much respect for you to do that. Now, what else have I got for you? I know this is the most popular feature that we've got. You ready? People love this.
For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. This is the best Florida stories of 2022.
Thank you.
All right, next on Florida Stories is not really a story so much as an observation, in that me having to watch thousands of stories on the newscast from Florida, I've noticed they really overdo the sound effects. They're really long, they're really loud, they're really over the top. Here's a good example.
The group was out fishing when they suddenly found themselves under fire. Local 10's Rush Lyle live now on Oliver Beach with our exclusive tonight, Rush.
Like, what is that? Is that a transformer? Just listen to that. Swipe over to the reporter.
Local 10's Rush Lyle live now on Oliver Beach with our exclusive tonight.
All right, I get it. Look, if Optimus Prime is going to transform from a semi into a humanoid robot during your live newscast, can you at least turn his microphone down a little bit?
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're going to Davenport, where there's some people having a nice little house party. I guess technically an apartment party. And a 32-year-old Florida man getting a little too drunk, acting a little too wild. They say, hey, Florida man. I mean, that's not really his name. But hey, Florida man, I think you've had enough. And he argues with him. So the host asked him to leave. No, I don't want to go. So they're like, okay, instead of leaving, why don't we just go for a walk then? Fine, I'll go for a walk. So him and two acquaintances go for a walk around the block. And then when they get on the other side of the block, the two acquaintances says, you know what, we don't think it's such a good idea if you come back. So 32-year-old drunk off his butt Florida man reaches into his fanny pack, pulls out a knife, and starts stabbing him. He stabs both of them 3 times. And they're okay. They're not going to die. They didn't need surgery or anything. But he apparently gets a bunch of blood on himself, too, and then goes and runs off. Problem is, he doesn't have a car. He doesn't have a way home. So he just goes into the nearest grocery store, a Publix grocery store, covered in blood, holding a knife, and asks the manager for help. And all he does is call the cops, and he gets himself arrested. So some people, when they get drunk, they get real giggly. Some people get real sad, and they cry. Some people get angry, and they like to fight. This Florida man gets a little stabby when he's drunk. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Stay tuned. Today's third installment of Florida Stories is right around the corner. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and get past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Merry Christmas.
Hi, it's Dan Gaffney.
And Becky Gaffney.
Tonight, we're going to be joined by some of our children with a Christmas story.
Glory to God in the highest.
Tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
It's coming up in just seconds. I hope you had a good day, and I hope you didn't gain any resentments. And I hope you didn't have to spend a lot of time with relatives you don't like. Because there's always one, isn't there? There's always one relative you oh, no, she's going to be there? Really? Do we have to see her? In my case, that's my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law. I could do without both of them. I could do without both of them. Because there's a point at which sometimes people lose their perspectives on life, their perspective on life. They become so entrenched in things, so entrenched in their wealth, that they forget that there are other people without that much money. There are other people for whom that sort of life is impossible. And they forget. And the thing that I've always done, and that I can't begin to tell you how helpful it's been, is I look for ways to be of service. I look for ways to help other people, not in some maudlin way, but I always look for ways to help somebody out. I was at the gym today. I saw a kid in a wheelchair, and I just made sure to ask the trainer, what is that kid's name? And now every time I see Alex, I will say hello to Alex by name. And that alone helps Alex. The recognition that we can give to another person is one of the greatest gifts that you and I can give. All right, it's you and me, Walter M. Sterling, Sterling on Christmas. Oh my gosh, look at that. It's a fresh new radio show on Christmas night. This is the Midnight Misfit portion of Sterling on Sunday. It's Sterling on Christmas, and you and I don't fit in. And it's a powerful thing, because it turns out that most of the really good ideas and new ideas and leadership ideas come from people who do not fit in, are not team players. The way I view a team player is this. I contribute to a solution that helps the company. That's how I'm a team player. I don't go rah, rah. I don't say, yeah, boss, that's a really good idea. That's not my view of anything but a kiss butt. Who needs that? Nobody needs that. I think you will enjoy this from the Gaffneys.
Merry Christmas, Midnight Misfits, and Merry Christmas, Walter Sterling. Hi, it's Dan Gaffney.
And Becky Gaffney.
With a special Christmas message for you tonight.
We didn't have all the kids, but we gathered all of them together that we could to tell you a Christmas story.
A portion of the Gospel of Luke in the second chapter.
Joseph went up from Galilee, from the city of Nazareth, to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and the family of David, in order to register along with Mary, who was engaged to him and was with child.
While they were there, the days were completed for her to give birth, and she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in cloths and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn.
In the same region, there were some shepherds staying out in the fields and keeping watch over their flock by night. And an angel of the Lord suddenly stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terribly frightened. But the angel said to them,
"Do not be afraid, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy, which will be for all the people. For today, in the city of David, there has been born a Savior, who is Christ the Lord. This will be a sign for you. You will find a baby wrapped in cloths, lying in a manger." And suddenly there appeared with the angel a multitude of heavenly hosts, praising God and saying,
"Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace is among men, with whom he is pleased."
When the angels had gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds began saying to one another, "Let us go straight to Bethlehem then, and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has made known to us."
So they came in a hurry and found their way to Mary and Joseph and the baby as he lay in the manger. When they had seen this, they made known the statement which had been told them about this child.
And all who heard it wondered at the things which were told them by the shepherds.
But Mary treasured all these things, pondering them in her heart.
The shepherds went back, glorifying and praising God for all they had heard and seen, just as had been told them.
Merry Christmas from the Gaffney family to yours.
What kind of family?
Highest.
What kind of family was yours? Is yours the kind of family that doesn't wrap the gifts, Santa puts it in front of the fireplace, everybody dives in when they show up? That was the kind of family I grew up in. Then I married into a family that wrapped everything. They wrap everything. And then what they do is something that to me is just bizarre. They sit in a circle, and one by one, they open their gifts based on who the name is. That's a lot of wrapping, and it's an unreasonable length of time for a kid to have to sit through. And I've said, could the kids go first? Well, they think that's a good idea, but then they never do it. And then I get a gift from my mother-in-law that I dread. I know you're not supposed to say this, but I do. Maybe you have the same experience. My mother-in-law always gives me two very warm shirts, heavy woolen shirts. I don't want those because they remind me of where I live, which is in a very cold place. I have no interest in living here. I want to move to Manhattan again. But what I want is white dress shirts from Brooks Brothers. That's what I want, white dress shirts from Brooks Brothers. I used to have 20 of them. Now I think it's down to one. That's not what I want. I want white dress shirts from Brooks Brothers. I don't want these heavy woolen shirts as though I'm Dinty Moore going to work the farm. Yes, and they have to be from Brooks Brothers for a reason, which is for some reason, those are the only shirts cut for guys like me. With a scotch more room. That's what I've found. A scotch more room. Why can't I say scotch? Has it been that long a day? No. A scotch more room. There. That's what I want. It doesn't seem unreasonable, but I'll never get it. I'll never get that shirt. It's sad, but true. You are a midnight misfit. You and I are the same. normal people don't listen to the radio at this time, and Lord knows, any broadcaster does not want to be on the radio at this time. They just don't. And because they think that the only time of day to be on the radio is afternoon drive or mornings, but I've never had any interest in that time of day because there's no intimacy. I can't have a meaningful conversation with you at that time of day. We're very busy then. But if somebody wanted to sell a product, this is the time of day to sell the product. This is when products move off the shelf. That's what I've always seen. That's my opinion. But this is the best time of year because even though the psychologists and psychiatrists say, you know, it's a very tough time of year, people have a lot of trouble at this time of year with loneliness, walk outside. If you walk outside, you can see kids. You can go to a mall, go downtown, look at the store windows, and feel a part of Christmas. Whereas, as I've said before, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, I don't feel a part of it unless I'm invited. You have to invite me to your house. You have to invite me to your pool. I can't just show up. Whereas at Christmas, I can just show up. I once walked past, I had a girlfriend who was outgoing. We walked past an apartment and they were having a New Year's Eve party. And she waves at them and they wave us in. We were like invited in right away. I had a terrible time. There was a bad piano player. Everybody was drunk. To me, there's nothing less fun than drunks. If it isn't, unless it's the concerts after the rockin' New Year's Eve in Times Square. The concerts that they show, the band performances they show after the rockin' New Year's Eve, those were taped like a week earlier. And they've got that kind of sad, stale food buffet feeling to them. No interest. It's an unusual thing. But that's how it goes. So now I'm in a family that unwraps the gifts. They sit in a circle. It's very formal. And to me, it's not fun. It's not Christmas. I believe the joy of Christmas is to come downstairs and dive in. Look at the stuff and go, oh my gosh, look at all this stuff. And just dive in. That to me is the joy of Christmas. That's what it is. I was very lucky. I had wonderful parents. And they believed in that. They believed, you know, just dive in. The greatest thing my father ever did on Christmas, or maybe it was Santa, we had a basement, a normal suburban basement, which had nothing in it except a furnace. On this particular Christmas, when I was 5 or 6, I think he had been waiting every second since I was born to make this happen. I come downstairs, after having gotten tons of stuff upstairs, I come downstairs, and 3/4 of the basement had been turned into a train table, a train system, a huge Lionel train system, O-gauge, was suddenly in our basement. It was so big and beautiful and magnificent that to get to the far corner, if a train went off the track, I'd have to climb under the table and pop up in what was a ice skating rink. He made an ice skating rink out of a mirror. I pushed up the mirror, and that's how I could get to the far side of the table. The other thing he did, which was insane, is the train set had many, many houses, little houses, and each little house had a light in it. And what a sane person would have done was put them on a master switch. You could turn off the lights in the houses all at once or turn them on all at once. Oh, no. My father created an individual circuit for each one of those houses. There were at least 30 toggle switches controlling those houses. I could turn them off and on individually. How crazy is that? Pretty crazy. That's what he did. So I'm grateful to my mother and my father for the great Christmases we always had where I felt safe and sane. And my brother Richard and my sister Elizabeth and I were always blessed with wonderful food, a warm house, a clean house, and sane, slightly eccentric parents. But no complaints. I have no movie of the week stories about my childhood. And I pray that you don't either. Because we don't deserve movie of the week stories about our childhood. I hope you look at your kids tonight and tuck them in and thank the Lord, thank your higher power for the gift that they are. And I hope we have a great year, a great 2023. My name is Walter M. Sterling.